Happy Good Friday and welcome to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. I'm your host, Joanne Chen. Studio with me is Krista Truman, my co-host, and John Pranger is our technician today. Allison Cole is not joining us today. She is on vacation.
Please forgive our technical difficulties.
Yes, it happens from time to time. I think we're on the air. Anyway, we have a packed show for you today, so we better get going now. Kathleen Tarillo, she's a teacher from UVic, is going to be joining us soon to talk about the imminent rabbit slaughter over at the UVic campus.
I can't believe they're doing that.
I know. On Easter weekend, come on. That's where all the news came out this week about it. It's just kind of stupid. Dr. Dana Madero will be joining us later on to talk about banning sow stalls in Manitoba, which is a campaign she's working on. And right now, let's do a draw for last week's prize, which is Will Tuttle's World Peace Diet. And we have four little names written down. People have signed on to Facebook to enter the draw.
I'm mixing the names up right now.
She's mixing them up. And one of the sheets are blank because I lost the name. But I know there's four entries. Okay, and the winner is Chantel Gates. So we will be connecting with you on Facebook to let you know how
Yay.
To get your book.
Congratulations, Chantel.
Congratulations. So on to the events, Krista.
Okay, well, first of all, we have an urgent notice here that we received from Janice, who runs Hearts on Noses, the miniature pig rescue out in Maple Ridge. She got word that thousands of spent egg-laying hens are due to be culled this coming Monday. A spent hen is one that doesn't lay enough eggs to be profitable any longer. So there is a team ready to drive as many of them as possible to the Lower Mainland, as many as we can find homes for. If you think that you can take in a hen that spent her life producing eggs and is now no longer useful to the industry, please contact Laura Johnson. Her number is 403-697-8980 or email laurajfour@shaw.ca. Laurajfour, that's all one word, @shaw.ca. And help maybe save a chicken's life or more than one. Okay, so for April events, today on Friday, April 2nd and every Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., there's an anti-fur leafleting event at Snowflake Furs near the Hotel Vancouver at 900 West Georgia Street in downtown Vancouver. Vancouver activists at the Fairmont Hotel today and every Friday as they peacefully protest outside the Snowflake Fur Store, handing out leaflets to passers-by about the fur industry. For more information, you can contact Lori Fitzgerald at lpacificrim@yahoo.ca. On Sunday, April 4th, that's this weekend, at 10 a.m., there's going to be a meditation and a mindful meal hosted by Earth Save Canada. This will be at Dharma Kitchen, 3667 West Broadway in Vancouver. Michael Latinsky, a former monk, I wonder how you become a former monk, will present a mini course in meditation at this unique event.
You get sick of shaving your head or something.
I always thought that would be like so easy, you know, you don't have to worry about how your hair looks every day. Following the mini meditation course, 100% vegan and mostly organic meal will be served at the Dharma Kitchen, one of Vancouver's premier vegan restaurants. There is a set menu for this. It's only $15 and everyone is welcome. I'm sure it would be a great introduction to meditation for newbies and a really interesting way to meet other people interested in the same things. If you need more info and to register for this event, you go to meetup.com and look up Vancouver Meatless Meetup. The deadline for registrations is tomorrow at 9:45 a.m., so register soon. On Sunday, April 10th, from 1:30 to 4:30, a powerful voice animal rights community dialogue series will present How Can We Best Work Together to Achieve Animal Rights? And this is hosted by Liberation BC, and it's at Radha Yoga and Eatery, which is located at 628 Main Street, Vancouver. It's a very beautiful space. Come and join other like-minded activists to explore new, interesting ways of working together. This event will be a friendly conversation in a comfortable cafe-style setting. Three topics will be chosen at the end of the meeting, which will become the topics of the next three events in the series, which will likely be held in June, September, and November. The idea is to start building systems of cooperation and collaboration that respect the work we're all doing and our different goals, but enable us to work more effectively together. Collaboration and cooperation can mean more than forming coalitions or merging organizations. There are lots of ways we can work together. If you're interested in attending, please register at powerfulvoice.eventbrite.com. That's B-R-I-T-E. There's a $5 registration fee, and attendance is limited to 50 people, so register soon. As of yesterday, there were only 8 spaces left. On Saturday and Sunday, April 10th and 11th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., there's going to be Veg Fest down in Seattle in Washington.
Wow, cool.
I have wanted to go to this for so long, and I haven't renewed my passport. And since they made it so that you have to have a passport to get down there, I never get to go to anything anymore.
Oh my gosh, you better get that straightened out.
I have to. So you head down to Seattle. It's only about a 2.5-3 hour drive from here, depending on border weights, that is. Head down and participate in this fun, informative, and delicious annual event. The Veg Fest features 500 different kinds of vegetarian food samples.
I am there. Oh, my God.
Cooking demonstrations, lectures of health and nutrition by doctors and dietitians, and more. Admission to the event is $8 American or free for children under 12. To find out more, check out the Vegetarians of Washington website at www.vegofwa.org/VegFest. On Sunday, April 11th at 6 and at 8, there's a vegan secret supper. It's at a secret location in Vancouver, very mysterious. Mm-hmm. The secret suppers are back. Secret suppers are suppers with set menus held in a secret location at a person's home who hosts the event. These vegan secret suppers have received wonderful reviews amongst those who have attended. I even read about it in the Georgia Strait, so I don't know how secret it is anymore.
Yeah, they were in the Vancouver Sun, too. But I guess you don't get the emails unless you know somebody.
That's right. Yeah, you've got to get hooked up. Yes. So if you want to register, you can email vegansecretsupper@gmail.com. And finally, on Saturday, April 24th at 4 p.m., Eyes Wide Open Film Series presents Meet the Truth. On the lower level of the Vancouver Public Library, 350 West Georgia Street in Vancouver, this is presented by Dutch politician Marianne Thieme. Meet the Truth is the very first documentary to address the relationship between livestock farming and climate change. Admission is free. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you'd like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. And now over to you, Joanne.
Thank you, Krista. A controversy is brewing at the University of Victoria over the rabbit overpopulation issue. UVic officials are saying that since their pilot project to capture, sterilize, and relocate did not work out, that they were going to start culling the bunnies. My first guest, Kathleen Tarrio, is a concerned bunny lover and an ESL teacher at UVic. Kathleen was one of the volunteers working on the pilot project. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good to hear your voice.
Me too. Yes.
So the Globe and Mail said that the pilot project to capture, sterilize, and relocate 150 bunnies was a flop. Was it a flop?
I don't think so, because if you look at the release that they had on the university put out December 23rd last year, mm-hmm. and you look at the objectives, they wanted to identify, for this particular project, they wanted to identify the most effective methods for long-term management. Mm-hmm. They wanted to find out potential costs, and they wanted to find out the community capacity to respond. And I believe the project fulfilled all of that very successfully. First of all, what they did is they found out that the trapping was possible. In fact, I almost could say it was, I wouldn't say this quite, but it was almost to the point of being easy, to the point that, you know, it took them 8 hours to capture 50 of them, which I think was a,
That's
you
really
know,
good.
A good thing for this
yeah.
project. In terms of community support, they had 18 physical volunteers, people that actually volunteered their time and energy, but they had about 80 responses from the community in terms of donations and people wanting to help out and that kind of thing.
Amazing.
And this was only over a month and with very, very little publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they were very successful at securing several veterinarians to come on board to help out with this. So how they're making this sound like a failure, I think this is not true, you know?
Right. Now, they're claiming that out of the 50 bunnies they managed to spay and neuter, they were only they were unable to find homes for 40 of them. And were there really no homes for these bunnies, or was there another factor preventing these bunnies from getting to their homes?
Oh, I'm so happy that you asked that question. No, there were homes. There always were homes for these people. The reason it couldn't happen is because of a little roadblock that came that was unexpected, that the ministry wouldn't allow the permits to take them off the property, basically. So they would allow them for baby rabbits, but they wouldn't allow them for full-grown rabbits, considering them as wildlife. So this is something they would have to overcome for this type of program to relocate them, but not for the long-term program, which was trap, neuter, and release. You know, they didn't need the permits for that.
Right. So if you just release them, there wouldn't be that issue to deal with.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Now the chief safety officer, Mr. Richard Pisker, likened the culling to mercy killing because he claimed that the bunnies captured had injuries, including missing eyes, torn ears, and infections, and almost all were malnourished. Do you support the claims of the unhealthy rabbits?
And no, and I had access to the records, too, as well. And I would like to let you know that there were 51 rabbits in total.
Okay.
Three were injured, and one, unfortunately, had to be euthanized because the injuries could not really be helped, and he was in pain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two have recuperated, and they're in fine health.
Great.
The rest of the bunnies were all, in fact, deemed fit, you know, fit and healthy. In fact, in the sterilization process, they recovered more quickly than what pet rabbits would do because they are in better shape than pet rabbits because they're out in the, you know, out in the environment getting exercise, I suppose, you know. So, no, I don't think this is true. I mean, they were lean because they're coming from a winter, you know, where there's not quite as much food source around, but they definitely were fit and healthy. So I hate to say this, but that information is not correct.
Oh, gosh, it's so awful seeing all this false information out there. And so I also read that it cost the university $348 to capture and fix each rabbit for a total of $17,000 to capture 51 rabbits. So that sounds like a lot of money. Is that why they want to cull the rabbits?
Well, I'll answer that in two parts. You know, part of it is cost, but I'll probably get back to that in a few minutes. But you have to understand that this cost was not the cost of the actual sterilization and the releasing and the taking care of the rabbits. A big part of it, over half of it, were the startup costs and the salary for the woman that organized the program, you know. So the actual cost to sterilize them was $25 for a male and $35 for the female. And if you know about, you know, sterilization for animals, that is extremely low cost. And this is because of the wonderful veterinarians that came on board helped out to do this at a low cost. So I think, you know, that information is true if you look at it in a certain way. But if you look at exactly, if you have to look at the breakdown, they're not presenting the facts as they should be presented.
Right. And the startup cost, what is that?
Well, for one thing, the woman that organized this had to, by government regulations, set up particular cages, had to build very strict specifications.
Okay.
And, you know, that was one of them. I can't really get into
And those cages can be reused as you capture more rabbits. So
these are like initial costs that would have gone towards a long-term program.
Now, do you think there's enough public interest out there to fund and make the capture, sterilize, and release project work on a long-term basis?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, I'm talking to lots of people, and people want to do this, you know. Particularly the student body, I think, you know, they're a part of UVic. It's, you know, something that's very special. And I think just by 1 month, like I told you, her raising about $30,000 in, you know, services and donations and that kind of thing, I think that's quite a bit of money. And, you know, I think it could be more if it was publicized more, you know.
Do you think that there are other long-term humane solutions to deal with these rabbits that have been proven to work?
I don't think they've tried it or explored it as carefully as they could. I think, you know, the most obvious one is the TNR, which is trapping, neutering, and releasing. And there's some amazing examples of them working very well. For example, the Stanford Project was with feral cats, but it was a very similar situation to what is happening at UVic. And they started out with 1,500, and now their populations are around 300, you know. I mean, this is after a certain amount of years, but it does work.
Right.
At the moment now, there was also a project in Washington in their business park. They managed to do this with 652 rabbits. And now in Long Beach, California, I don't have the statistics for it, but apparently that's being done as we speak. And it's been a, or actually maybe it's completed at this point, and it's been a very successful project too. There are many others too. I mean, it's possible and it's doable, and I think that's what the pilot project showed, you know.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes left. What actions can the public take to help you stop this cull?
Well, I think I just want to say a few things about cull. Remember, cull means kill, okay?
Yeah.
And it's not pretty, and it's not pretty how they're intending to do it either. One of the ways they want to do it is that they say is humane is with injection, and they have to put it directly into the heart of the rabbit because of the lack of the veins. It's terrible, it's horrible. Vets will not do it. So you can imagine what it would be like, right? But anyways, I guess what I want to say is if you're against it, I think, you know, calling for moral and ethical reasons is wrong, but it's also going to be costly because the rabbits will come back. They will have this problem forever. So if you want to have a voice in this, you have to speak out. You have to write a letter to the people who can make the changes. And we have a website, www.uvicbunnies.org, and there's information on who you can write to or call to try and convince them to change their policies. Or you can email at savethebunnies@yahoo.ca, and we have a Facebook page which is called UVic Bun Management. So there's three different avenues that you can get information from, and hopefully if everybody speaks out, this will not happen. I think you can win sort of in the arena of public opinion, you know.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us,
Kathleen. Thanks,
Kathleen.
That was very interesting.
Yes. Well, I just hope, you know, it will help.
Good luck with everything. Hopefully everybody will be calling and joining the groups. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. On to the news. I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio at 102.7 FM. This first news is good news from Vancouver Sun. Chris Porter, a controversial dolphin trainer with a lucrative business capturing animals in Solomon Islands and selling them to aquariums, says he has had a change of heart and is planning to release his last 17 dolphins. When does this ever happen? Last month, Tilikum the killer whale pulled SeaWorld Orlando trainer by her ponytail off her poolside platform, drowning her. Porter said the news shook him and proved that trainers have been unable to provide for the needs of such intelligent animal. Another catalyst for his decision to quit was the Oscar-winning documentary The Cove, which showed the bloody capture of the slaughter of dolphins in Japan. Next one is from Ecorazzi. Besides his alleged affairs, racist actions, and general not-so-nice-guy behavior, Jesse James is now also being accused of animal abuse. Accusations claim that Jesse fought two of his pit bulls until almost death. Apparently, one of the dog's leg was almost torn completely off. According to PerezHilton.com, a source claims Sandra Bullock was horrified and in tears when she first heard what happened to those animals. She believes that he was a gentle biker with a heart of gold. But if he can let this sort of thing happen to dogs, Sandra Bullock is a dog and animal lover, by the way, that tells you who he really is. Jesse is heartless, she says. That was her husband.
Oh, my goodness.
You hear about all the controversy, right?
You think you know somebody.
I know. and it's their dog, and the dog keeps running away, and now they know why.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I wonder what stories he has to make up to because the dog has all these injuries,
No
right?
kidding.
Yeah. Well, this last one is from New York Times. More good news. The seal hunt has begun, but no one is clubbing any seals. The combination of little ice and scattered herds of harp seals has persuaded most hunters around the Gulf to stay at home. We haven't seen any seals around the shore here anywhere, said Robert Courtney, the president of the North of Smoky Inverness South Fishermen's Association in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. I think they went to the north, 300 miles from where we are. It's too far. Mr. Courtney thinks that none of the 30 to 40 boats from Cape Breton that usually participate in the seal hunt will this year. The situation is much the same in the neighboring Magdalen Island of Quebec. Only one boat, whose crew hopes to provide seal meat to restaurants, has set out so far. That's going to be a failed venture because I hear seal meat really tastes horribly.
I have heard that as well.
Yeah. Many Gulf residents view the ice-free spring as a sign of global warming. Environment Canada reported that until mid-March, the ice was at its lowest in more than four decades of record-keeping. Many female harp seals delayed giving birth for up to 2 weeks as they searched for ice. A large number of the seals traveled about 100 miles beyond the usual northern limits of their range to find ice, although it is unclear how many females produce pups after the long journey. And that's it for Animal Voices News. On to you, Krista.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that it's nice to hear that more seals are living, but it's sad to know about the circumstances and that they're losing their habitat, which is very unfortunate. Today, I want to talk a little bit about vegan baking and cooking, my favorite topic. I do that for a living, so it makes sense that it's one of the things I like to talk about most.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one of my favorite things to watch when I watch TV is the Food Network. I've had some people react with surprise when I've told them this, because if you've seen the shows on the Food Network, by no stretch in the imagination can most of them be considered vegan-friendly. Almost every program is laden with meat, or at the very least, eggs and dairy products, so what on earth could I possibly be gleaning from these shows? True, the programs that focus entirely on meat preparation are a bit big turn off, and I can't stomach watching them. But I have developed a coping method for shows where meat is an incidental ingredient in things, and can imagine the hosts using seitan, tofu, or tempeh instead. It works surprisingly well. Since most meat dishes are just the meat with a particular sauce or seasoning, it's pretty easy to recreate these dishes in a vegan way, and to delicious results. Same with dairy products. Everyone knows that non-dairy milks, especially soy, almond, and coconut milk, can easily take the place of dairy milk or cream. And for cheese, there are a variety of vegan cheese replacements on the market. Some are better than others. And many, many recipes for making your own vegan cheese at home can be found online. Butter is easily replaced with vegan margarine or even just a bit of oil, depending on what you're making. And if you have a basic understanding of food science and the different roles that ingredients play in various recipes, you can use your knowledge to translate non-vegan recipes to vegan ones without much trouble. That's part of what's interesting about watching the Food Network. It's learning more about how ingredients interact with one another. By far, though, the question I get asked the most is how to replace eggs in meals and desserts. Eggs are an interesting ingredient because they perform a couple of different functions if we're talking about food science. Eggs act as a binding agent. They hold ingredients together. They provide some fat and flavor to foods. They can also act as thickeners and homogenizers. They also have leavening properties and provide lift to baked goods in the absence of or in addition to yeast and chemical leaveners like baking soda or baking powder. So keeping these things in mind, we have to evaluate an egg-laden recipe that we want to make vegan very carefully before proceeding. And some recipes that only call for a single egg, like cookies, I suspect that eggs are added almost as an afterthought. If you think about it, back in the days before refrigeration, when people kept their own chickens, a certain number of eggs had to be used each day or else they'd go to waste. Over all the years I've been baking, I have found that a cookie recipe that calls for a single egg can completely go without any egg replacement to almost no ill effect. You just have to add a little extra moisture to the recipe, which is easily done with a couple of tablespoons of water or non-dairy milk. For recipes that call for more than one egg, up to four or so, you can try one of the commercially prepared powdered mixes that are designed to replace eggs and baked goods. Probably the most commonly referred to one is Energy Brand, which has been around since before I went vegan. I also know that Bob's Red Mill Company makes a different kind. And there are several different recipes for making your own on the internet. For things like cakes, they're great because those recipes generally only call for 2 or 3 eggs. These powdered mixes are a combination of starches and leavening agents, so they can act as binders and provide lift to the recipe. Some people suggest replacing eggs and baked goods with something called flax goop. That's ground flax seeds mixed with water, and it's allowed to sit for a while to form a kind of gel. Other suggestions are mashed bananas, applesauce, or whipped tofu. These do work to some degree, especially as binders, but none of them can provide any leavening to the recipe. If you decide to use these to replace eggs, you'll want to add some extra chemical leaveners to your dry ingredients, but not much. Very few things taste as unpleasant, and using too much can actually ruin a cake quite thoroughly. I do have to give tofu props for replicating eggs in recipes like vegan quiche, tofu scramble, crepes, and omelets. I have even made vegan deviled eggs using tofu.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
You use silken tofu. Yeah. It's square. I mean, you could carve it to look round, right, but it's funny. Medium firm and silken tofu have the perfect consistency for these dishes, very much like cooked egg whites. If you use the correct seasonings and a little turmeric for color, you won't miss eggs at all, I promise. When I make tofu scramble, I make sure to add some nutritional yeast, a little Indian black salt, which is actually pink. It has some minerals in it that make it smell kind of like sulfur, just like an egg, sage, and a generous amount of salt and pepper. For crepes and omelets, tofu blended with some flour, starch, and salt, and a dash of apple cider vinegar can create a lovely, thin, eggy-like texture, which works really well with all kinds of fillings. While many options exist for replacing eggs in most recipes, I had consigned myself for many years that vegans will never have an angel food cake or a meringue. There has just never been a consistently good way to replicate egg whites fluffed up after whipping with a ton of air incorporated into them. This magical seeming property of egg whites is what makes angel food cake so fluffy and light on the tongue and what makes a meringue so foamy. Just this past week, however, I found out that a New Zealand company called Angel Food has started making and selling vegan meringue kits.
No way.
That's right. They're available for order online, which is great. This, combined with the make your own vegan marshmallow kits, and even the pre-made vegan marshmallows, are making the need for animal products absolutely obsolete in every way, even in our favorite dishes. Mm-hmm. I am happy to answer any vegan cooking questions you have about replacing animal foods in your favorite recipes or anything at all, so please do feel free to contact me via email, recipes@veganmania.com. It might take me a few days to get back to you, but I'm always happy to help. And that's my bit for this week. That's actually my last bit as co-host for Animal Voices. I have had a great time on the show over the last few months, but my schedule is changing a lot, and I find I have less and less time available to devote to anything but my work and my family. Starting next week, I will simply be an avid listener like the rest of you. So thanks for all the feedback and learning that's happened here for me and my time on the show. I'm going to miss it.
We're going to miss you too, Krista, but we will have you back on the show probably as a guest.
That would be really fun.
Yeah. So what are you moving on to do?
Well, as most people know, I run my own business. It's called Vegan Mania, and it's a little baking and catering business here in Vancouver. And I have started providing baked goods to various restaurants and places around town. So, for instance, Carmivore next week will be carrying some of my things every week in stock.
That's great.
And I've started doing some pastries for Nuba restaurants, which I'm very excited about. I don't know if anyone's ever eaten there, but you can find my baklava and some chocolate cake there.
That's amazing. You know, baklava, you can never get baklava because it always has honey in
That's
it.
That's right.
So it's
and
great.
Butter, tons of butter.
Right. At this time we still have a couple minutes, so I'm going to read something that Allison unfortunately can't be here today, so she wrote something to bid you farewell.
Oh, Allison.
Yeah. So pretend that I'm her.
Okay.
I would like to take this time to wish our beloved co-host Krista Truman a heartfelt farewell and good luck as she leaves the Animal Voices radio show to work more on her burgeoning vegan catering and baking business. Krista, since the three of us started doing the show 5 months ago, I've come to know and respect you as a wonderful, humorous, and compassionate person who is truly knowledgeable, wise, and insightful on the vegan lifestyle, among many other things. It's been a joy to work with you and to learn from your extremely perceptive and thoughtful commentaries and on-air discussions with us. Plus, I think you have an amazing radio voice.
Aww.
Take care, and best wishes to you as you pursue your goals and thus hopefully infiltrate our city with your delicious vegan goodies everywhere.
Aw, Allison, that was so sweet. Thank you so much.
And for me, you and your lovely and healthy kids and wonderful husband are a shining example of healthy, happy vegans. And we're very sad to be losing you. But we know no matter what you're doing, you will continue putting 100% of your efforts to create a better world for animals through your example and through creating yummy vegan desserts. So,
oh, you guys are so kind. Thank you so much. This isn't goodbye forever. It's just farewell for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll definitely have you back.
I can't wait to come back. It'll be great fun. I'll bring goodies.
Great. Okay. So on to our next interview. Dana Madero is an associate professor of literature at the University of Manitoba and a member of the Farm Animal Welfare Committee with the Winnipeg Humane Society. She has been an outspoken advocate both on and off campus to ban sow stalls and getting pigs out of extreme confinement. Welcome to Animal Voices, Dr. Madero.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Great. Thank you for joining us on this holiday Friday.
Oh, that's fine.
So tell us about Winnipeg Humane Society's Quit Stalling campaign, and how did you, a professor of literature, get involved with this?
I think, I can't remember the exact year it started. I think it was about 8 years ago. The executive director, Vicki Burns, put it together. She got an art student to create a life-size sow out of papier-mâché, and she managed to get a real intensive confinement sow gestation crate and put the fake pig in there, which we named Penelope. Mm-hmm. And then she started doing this. I didn't know this was going on because I was on a different committee at the time, the Animal Advocacy Committee. Mm-hmm. And so she invited me and a couple of other of us to a meeting about the way pigs are kept, like throughout the world, except mm-hmm. in Europe, which it's banned. And so we went. She just said, you know, I thought I would like to start this campaign. Would you please come and to a meeting on the way, you know, the way pigs are treated in Manitoba? So I went, and she said it's going to be called Quit Stalling, and this is how pigs are kept in these cages that are about the size of the pig herself, mm-hmm. in rows and rows and rows of thousands. And I just couldn't believe it. So we go out for 8 years. We've been going to shopping malls and events and stuff, and we get volunteers at a table with petitions to ban
it.
Yeah.
And what's the reaction like from the public when you go out to malls with this stall with a pig inside?
It's really amazing. It's some people just can't believe it. I mean, and elderly people, sometimes they cry. They say, you know, that's not what it was like when I had a farm.
Right.
And they can't believe it. And people, we started keeping and copying the signatures and taking record of them about, I can't remember how many years ago, 4 years ago, I think we have over 10,000 signatures now.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, if we'd started from the beginning, it would be maybe twice that or more. Yeah, so, and then we do get hog producers, pork producers who scream at us too. So, yeah.
Well, it's extremely cruel. Like, you know, you don't have to be a vegetarian. These animals can't even turn around or take a step back and forward, right?
That's right.
So naturally, as a professor at University of Manitoba, you decided to bring your outreach work to campus by setting up the displays of sow stalls and getting petitions signed to ban this practice. Was your message received with open arms by the faculty and staff?
That's funny. That just cracks me up. Well, because it was like this slow awareness. We started coming during Environment Week, so other like vegan groups come out and organic groups and Greenpeace, but that type of group started coming to campus too. So we set up our table there, and I can't remember how many years ago that was, like four maybe, and we were surrounded by agriculture students, like really angry agriculture students, and I thought, that's strange, like I could never quite figure it out, and then it went on again. The agriculture students came out really angrily, and then I think it was last year that they set up their own table and handed out Manitoba pork
pamphlets.
Yeah, and stickers that say Farmers Feed Cities. And they were telling other people that we were misinforming the public, which that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And they would split hairs, you know, like they would mm-hmm. say she's not. We have a sign that is on top of the crate that says this is not a temporary holding pen. This is where a pregnant pig spends her entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were telling the public is that isn't true. Okay, so she's walked to a farrowing crate to give birth, and then she's walked back to that, and she's re-inseminated.
Mm-hmm.
And they want us to put that on a sign. they think that walking down the hall,
that would make it much better, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's exercise. And yeah, so it's incredible how they do this. So mm-hmm. So I wrote a vitriolic piece in the student newspaper last year saying that was absolutely appalling that we
mm-hmm.
can't have 5 days out of a year when you have a faculty and we can't, and you brought shiny glossy pamphlets while we have a petition work. We're a charity. You have Manitoba Pork behind you. Like just this, the comparison of the two, and they were furious.
Hmm.
The only reason I know how furious the students were is because I just know kids who write for the paper.
Yeah.
They told me that their offices were basically stampeded with the students demanding that it was libel and all this stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So.
And you're not against the pork producers. You want to work with them to make a better system.
Well, yeah, that's really basically... Yeah, like that's what I find really kind of disconcerting is that what we're petitioning the government is to finance a switchover.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not out there saying go vegan, this is cruel. We're saying
mm-hmm.
if you want your bacon, you're going to want to pay more for it, or you're swallowing cruelty, basically.
Right.
Like it's like a consumer movement and a government
mm-hmm.
petition. That's right, and they think it's a threatening. But what they don't like is it makes visible a practice that they're obviously not pleased to have.
Right. And that they work very hard at hiding from the public.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, because their glossy pamphlets are not, they don't have like thousands of sows, like, you know, chewing on bars,
mm-hmm.
going, here's your happy dinner. They're usually portrayed on hay or being held by a farmer or something. So it's a spin, and they're not happy. So what happened is I had met with their professor the year before when we were surrounded by agriculture students. So not last year, but the year before, their professor came out to talk to me, and she gave me her card, and she said, I'm head of animal science. And I had no idea. Like, I didn't know what this was. Because I had never been tracking the university angle of things. And I said, well, we should meet. You know, we should be able to talk. We should be able to work together. This is ridiculous. And so we met. She came to the Humane Society, and she met the chair of my committee, myself, a couple of other volunteers, and she brought along some PR person. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, so what we'll do is we'll figure this out so that it's not antagonistic. And she basically lectured us for 2 hours on that sow stalls are for the animal's well-being.
Right. Was this what led to a debate that you
mm-hmm.
actually set up in the school?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that debate? Because I just watched it last night, and it was astonishing. At the end of the debate, basically, they agreed with you.
Yes, they did.
That's awesome.
It's so awesome, but they're not doing anything. Like, we clearly won. We pulled everybody around, and then the professor, the female on the debate, pulled Paul Shapiro from the Humane Society of the United States aside and said, yes, but you don't really mean this. You want to abolish all animal agriculture. And he was actually very unsettled, and he said, no, we really just don't want the cruelty. And so, yeah, like there's not a lot of honesty in the interactions. So.
Well, it's funny that they accuse them of having hidden agendas.
I know.
I know
the irony.
Their agenda is quite obvious. It's the bottom line, right? It's all profit, so.
The irony is agonizing.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that start? Oh, yeah. Okay, so the year before we met, and that went terribly, and my good friend Twyla Francois, who's you know, very in the field, you know, said, I hate meeting with industry. And I said, And I said, but she's a professor at university. And it was this weird thing that the professor was industry became clear. So then last year I published this advertising versus educating on campus, like, how is it possible that we can't have a week to advocate for pigs who don't have a voice, but you can throw these pamphlets around from Manitoba Pork, blah, blah, blah. So this professor, wrote a letter to the editor. And it was a little bit mean-spirited. Dr. Maduro, her little stint with the Humane Society, and blah, blah, and wee-wee, and all this stuff. And I just picked up the newspaper and walked into a friend's office who's the director for the Center of Applied Ethics at the university, and I said, we became friends actually over the Quit Stalling campaign in that last couple of weeks, because I said to him, there's this corporate presence on campus, and I'm going to write an essay on it. And he said, yeah, do it, because he fights corporate influence in the Faculty of Medicine. Mm-hmm. So he and I have sort of had a lot of interesting conversations. Anyway, and he said, okay. He read her letter to the editor, and he said, okay, bring in whoever you want, and we will challenge them to a debate.
Great.
And I said, can I have Paul Shapiro from the HSUS? And he said, yes, I'll fly him up. So we challenged them to a debate in, I think it was April of last year, and they would not meet with us. Repeated insistence to meet with the Dean of Agriculture, to meet with her, to say we were bringing in Paul Shapiro and Twyla Francois over and over and over. If you wanted to clarify this issue for all the students on campus, we should bring it to the fore and debate it. And they wouldn't answer. And then we just kept saying, well, if you don't show up, we're going to proceed with it. We're going to publicize your refusal. You know, I don't see why this can't be done collegially. And then little by little we met, and yeah.
And it happened. Now, you're saying that after they've basically agreed with you after the debate, they're going back on their word. What about the students? Are they, you know, seeing things differently now?
I don't think so.
Okay.
What happened really, it was really interesting. So that debate was amazingly attended and televised. And then, I mean, we might have, you know, you might get through to some people, but what happened really, what's really interesting is Environment Week is every year in late March, and I went on their Faculty of Agriculture's website.
Mm-hmm.
I just sniff around, I noticed they were bringing in an inspirational speaker the week before Environment Week, and so I Googled him, and he is a speaker who tells proud American and Canadian people, farmers, he calls them, to stand up for their industry against, quote, the animal rights conflict industry.
Well, that's too bad that they want to remain backwards.
It's really too bad, yeah.
Now, what's the scale of pork production in Manitoba? It seems like they have a huge presence on campus.
Yeah, they have a huge presence on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So, and apparently there's research being done on, you know, putting pigs on straw, but they're not pushing that move. You know, it's just sort of being done without it translating. And everything is like, well, you know, we don't want to do this hastily.
Right.
It's very difficult, and it's all this. It's just stalling, which is why we call it
quit stalling.
So apparently, the industry is a billion dollar industry
in Manitoba alone.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
do you produce most of Canada's pork?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, but
I'm not sure. I think Quebec is, and Ontario, I mean, every single province, even PEI, produces pork. I was saying to a friend of mine, if someone in Canada could find like a square inch of land, they'll put a pig in a cage and try to sell it. It's flesh, basically. So, but it's up there. I'm not sure if it's the top exporter. And they've had, the industry's had a rough time, you know, with H1N1 and all that. So, but they're, you know, trying to come back strong.
Now, last year there were a series of barn fires in Manitoba. Can you give us a little bit of background on these fires and why they're happening, and specifically in the pork industry?
Mm-hmm. I can get the exact numbers are on CETFA's website,
which is
Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals.
Okay.
CETFA.com. And but it goes something like in 2003, 3,000 pigs were lost to barn fires, and then in 2007, it's 30,000,
wow.
And then in 2008, 2009, it's another 30,000. So it's an enormous leap and multiplication. And then if you, we've been tracking it along with the Canadian Coalition for Farm Animals. So Twyla and I and Stephanie Brown of CCFA have been monitoring them, and it's coming to about one a week across Canada, and then sometimes twice a week if you factor in the U.S. So it's some kind of horrific trend.
And why is it happening? Are people smoking in the barns, or what's going on?
Well, the barns have very little regulation.
Mm-hmm.
They're under old laws, like old, you know, this is an old barn house
mm-hmm.
law. They're not coded as industrial production warehouses, and so that they're not properly maintained. They don't have sprinkler systems, and there are very few employees there at any time of the day, and these barn fires usually happen at night, and
mm-hmm.
the ammonia from the animal's urine corrodes wiring, and heat lamps are accidentally left on, and
mm-hmm.
such things.
Now,
so,
I've heard some theories. You don't have to answer this if you don't
mm-hmm.
want to. I've heard some theories, read some news reports saying that these can be insurance fraud cases where
mm-hmm.
These pork producers aren't making enough money, and they're just setting the barns on fire to collect insurance money.
I don't think it's setting the farms setting them on fire. I think it's not providing the mechanisms by which to prevent the barn fires.
Okay.
And they are very easily inflammable contraptions, these things. And they can incinerate like 8,700 pigs in one spot. Somebody on a blog somewhere wrote, "I don't understand why these barn fires keep happening in Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
How do all these pigs die in one place if they're outside?" And I had to write back and say, "Well, let's get this image straight." We met with the Twyla, Stephanie Brown, and I, and a firefighter met with the deputy chief of firemen. I can't quite get the name right. And to say, we need sprinklers, we need monitoring, this needs to be tracked, this is an outrage. And he said, "Oh, if only people cared for children that much."
Oh, my God.
So it's just this constant battle to give, like, the minimum standard of care to these animals that, you know, we take so much from them.
Now, obviously, there needs to be a reform in the way they treat their animals, and also, you know, the way they function politically and all that. So you recently wrote an article entitled Animal Rights and Academic Freedom, in which you said, "In my opinion, the Faculty of Agriculture's Department of Animal Science is too bound up with the pork industry." Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. I wanted to ask you, how did you find out about this?
I don't know. I get lots of emails about animal rights things.
Okay. I was just wondering, like, wow, that's cool. Like an essay in a school newspaper in Manitoba hits the scene in BC. That's
yeah.
pretty awesome. It's one of my colleagues said, "You've got to stop poking that ant's nest." Like, you know, writing these letters, these essays in the student newspaper. I'm like, yeah, I know. I just like to keep the issue at the front of people's minds. But what happened was, a few months ago, I was informed that a pork producer lost her mind when I announced on my blog, I have an animal rights blog, that I won a teaching award. And she had figured out who my anonymous, like my pseudonym was, and connected the pseudonym to me, and then I announced I won an award for teaching, and at convocation it was announced that they were very impressed with my animal rights work, and that I, you know, practice what I preach or whatever. So she printed off pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of my blog and sent it all the way up through the administrative ranks of my university, saying what an outrage it was for them to give me a teaching award. And they wrote back, "Well, we didn't. It was the graduate students, and also she's a citizen and has the right to her voice," kind of thing. And I was sitting on that for months, like in kind of shock that 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 happened to me, and also how, what would have happened to me if I didn't have tenure and promotion and a huge union on my campus and a really great lawyer who works for our union. Like, all these things are in place for me to be vocal, and I have some collegial support, you know, the Ethics Center guy and things like that, who are saying, don't be ridiculous, like, you have the right to contest this. So I don't know, I was sitting on it, and we were going to bring in this pig farmer from the Netherlands because they've been, you know, forced by law to switch over to humane methods, and he's been doing it for years, and he just thinks talking about sow stalls is just the most ridiculous, backward, disgusting, horrendous thing. And he waived his speaker fee, and we were flying him in. So I thought, well, I kind of want to talk about this silencing that someone tried to do. It was really scary because I didn't know who it was. I was never CC'd on anything, and I was just told, be careful on your blog, you're being watched by the wrong people. And I thought, oh damn, you know. So I wanted to talk about that, and I also wanted to announce that we were bringing in Dr. Sheepins and a few other people to talk about factory farming during Environment Week. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do it by this. And so I wrote, like, it's a shame that industry has such an influence on our Faculty of Agriculture, and has anybody tried to shut me up because I speak against this interest? Yes, and all this stuff. And then, oh my God, did it ever hit the fan again? So, but so I have to say, regarding
academics, they are intricately connected.
The university really is a branch of the industry. Really is a branch.
I was going to say, they have to indoctrinate these students into this way of farming, because otherwise when they got there, they'd be so shocked and horrified by what they saw. They'd be like, I got to leave this industry.
Oh, that's so interesting. I never thought of it that way.
It's kind of like the army, you know? They've got to desensitize you.
And,
yeah.
That's really interesting.
But, you know, the fact that you're getting sort of, like, attacked from the industry just shows you you've got them scared, right?
Well, I love it when people tell me that, because I wish I could believe that. And everybody says, of course it is, of course it is. And I'm just sort of shell-shocked and terrified. And then I get better, and then I feel better. But they came after me. The head of animal science sent me a memo saying, you're bordering on defamation and in disrespectful workplace environment, and, you know, you had better watch yourself, and CC'd it again to every boss on the planet.
Oh my gosh.
And so the academic freedom part relates to the fact that I have a union and I have tenure. And if I didn't have either one of those things, there's no way I could risk my job. I'd have to do this very differently.
It was sort of like a you'll never work in this town again thing.
That's
amazing.
It's funny that just telling the truth about something can be so threatening to people.
I think that's fantastic that you said that, because one of my best friends is a linguistics professor, and she's pulled me aside, and she said, I read your essay, and then I read the back and forth memos, because then I wrote a memo, CC'd to everybody too, you know, defending my position, and she said, you know, you're accused of antagonism and hostility and all this stuff, and that isn't actually true. Everything that you write is just simply facts. It's the truth.
It's facts. Yep.
It's carefully laid out, and what is happening is, in their retaliation, is a different spin on what is actually the truth.
It certainly sounds like an intense situation, and thank you so much for, you know, fighting for the animals and you know, battling these people.
you're welcome.
They have a very vested interest in keeping things status quo, and you have nothing, you have no interest except in seeing pigs less suffering, so.
I know.
You are a hero. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
You soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
This spring, Co-op Radio is pleased to announce we no longer need your financial support. In a multi-million dollar deal, the station has been purchased by Energy Conglomerates, Inc., a subsidiary of Megacorp. Not. You own this radio station, and we don't sell out. No propaganda, no spin. Broadcasting from community-owned studios in the downtown East Side, real listener-supported radio has been the gem of Vancouver for 35 years. But there is no mega daddy keeping it going. We depend on regular people like you. An annual membership costs $25 for those on a fixed income. We suggest $60 for working folks. If things are going well, how about kicking in $100 or more to keep our volunteer programmers on the air? Any donation is welcome. That's what it takes. Listeners calling in or signing up online, you can keep CFRO-FM on the air for another great year. This is our spring fundraising drive starting April 9th. We count on your support and generosity to keep going, to keep free voices, Canadian music, all our multi-language programming, the juice of BC over the airwaves. Please support your favorite programs and CFRO listener-supported radio. Call us at 604-684-8494 for details or go to our website at cooperadio.org for secure online memberships or donations. This year, more than ever, we need your support and we appreciate it. Please, Co-op Radio, original, your radio station, keep it going, 604-684-8494. Call now. Get with the program.